ministry, pick up where we left off. There are discussions on the remuneration and benefits of the Deputy Public Protector. As some of you members know, there was a meeting held on the 23rd with the intention of trying to get some kind of consensus, and there are really three crisp issues. First one is whether the DPP should receive an increase in salary. Two, whether she should be given the use of a state-owned vehicle. And three, whether she should be provided with a gratuity at the end of her term of office linked to her salary. And presently there are two views. One is that if an increase is agreed to, it should be backdated to May 2010. The other view is that there should not be an increase in salary, nor should the benefits be increased until the relevant or proposed commission is established. There's no clarity on whether the DPP should be given a gratuity or not. All right.
You know, I'm raising it now because it's more every time the Public Protector comes, there tends to be an issue as to what was said in previous meetings. And if you remember, when she came on this issue, there was a relatively big dispute which was to be resolved by looking at the PMG minutes. Now, Chair, my problem is that, PMG cover this committee very well. Mr. Nkabinda sits regularly in the meetings, but we don't get access to those PMG minutes. If we want access to them, we've got to pay, and I think the rates are quite high. There used to be a free access for members of parliament, but because PMG are a private organization, they are wanting... they're needing to recoup money. The problem then is further compounded by the fact that Parliament, their expectation, as far as I understand it, was that Parliament would pay for the members, but they are not reaching agreement on that issue. So, Chair, I wanted to raise, I mean, obviously if there's the support of the committee, that you take the matter up with the House Chair of Committees, because I don't think it's correct that you know, we're having discussions on the basis of what are in reports. But if we want to get access to those reports, we have to do so individually and pay, I can't remember what the rates are, but pay a fair proportion. I mean, it's basically, I think, NGOs and still get it for free, but we don't. And I don't think it is unreasonable expecting Parliament to pay. So I wanted, if the support to propose that on behalf of the committee, you speak to the House Chair of Committees regarding the matter. I'm sure it may apply to the other committees that PMG monitors.
No, Chair, I fully support that proposal. I made extensive use of PMG minutes when it was still free, and particularly when we have committees that clash. Like this morning, finance is sitting at the same time as justice, and I would definitely support that proposal that it is raised urgently with the Whippery. PMG does incredibly good work on it, and it's very good to be able to access those. And why should we as individual MPs have to pay for that? And I fully understand why there's a need to recoup funds, bearing in mind the global financial situation and the donor funding that is lacking or stopping and deteriorating. So, Chair, thanks. We support that.
I don't have a problem with that proposal specifically now, but what I do have a concern about is why is Parliament not keeping our own minutes? Because, I mean, if we are having our own committees, we should be having our own minutes of our own committees. And I think when it comes to points of view like this, there is a dispute of, as to what then why, you know, why aren't we, why don't we? We shouldn't actually have to pay an outside organization. We don't know, I mean, I know many of them take excellent minutes and we do use them, but we don't know for sure that those are even entirely accurate as to what has been said. I have seen one or two things that I've been quoted in where I wasn't entirely correct. We should have our own committee minutes that we approve and correct if necessary.
Lumisa, followed by Giselle Adams, and then Mr. Jeffrey again.
Thank you, sir. JJ confused me. In the beginning, he stated the position I understood to be correct, that those are not the official minutes of our committee. They can assist us as a guide. And so, therefore, they have no obligation to make them readily available to us. We are Parliament, we should be having someone recording the proceedings of this meeting. And in other committees, that's what happens. Every meeting has a minutes that have to be adopted so that there's an accurate record of what took place previously. So I am of the view also, like David, that we should have a committee section providing us with that kind of service. Have our own minutes.
Chairperson, I agree with the previous two speakers. I want to add that sometimes it's very frustrating that if you can't attend the meetings or one or the other reason, and then you come to the meeting, you don't know what happened. You have to smell what happened, and also rely on PNG, that is an outside organization. It's not even part of Parliament. It might have been different if PNG was in fact part of Parliament. So I agree, we should, in fact, the committee section must assist us, and it should become the norm that whenever we have a meeting that we adopt the minutes of the previous meeting and then proceed further. Thank you.
I think there are two issues. I mean, it is, I mean, firstly, on the committee minutes, my understanding from Mr. Romano, and he can confirm, is that there are minutes, but they're basically very brief. And I think for somebody to actually take down everything that is said and record it accurately would be full time. I mean, Mr. Romano is jotting down as you speak, but then he's also doing other tasks as for the committee as committee secretary. So I don't know if that is done, and then also if a minutes are to be an official record, then they have to be confirmed. We have to confirm them at each meeting, which is going to take, particularly because our deliberations are sometimes quite long, is going to take quite a bit of time. So I'm not against having, you know, the records that Mr. Romano keeps, but just one, I don't think they're going to be that detailed. They're not going to be sort of what each person said, although Mr. Romano can confirm that, and if we want that, we may require increased capacity. And two, if they're to become official records, we are going to have to spend time reading them and dealing with them at the start of each meeting. And given that there are often nuances and things, you know, it may be that there's lots of changes, so that will be quite time consuming. The PMG minutes are not official, but they're there. They're accessible to other people. Why? And so I think it's a separate issue. Why can't they be accessible to us too, as in Parliament paying? Why do we have to pay individually? So I'd like it that we separate the two issues from the formal minutes of the committee, and we may need to discuss what we want to do. But secondly, then, an existing sort of verbatim transcript that is available to the public, that NGOs at least have access to for free. But we don't, because they need to recover some money.
My understanding is that our meetings recorded. Yes, they are. That's why you've got this thing. There's that big bank of things there in the corner.
No chance they love me.
So they are recorded, but to what extent is not clear. I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure that Valani's job is yet to take minutes. It is? Really?
It's secretary.
Oh, out of it. Okay. Now, all right, then, okay, there's a bit of clarity there. Then, the big issue then is the point raised by Mr. Jeffrey. Do you want the short, crisper version of the minutes, or a more detailed version? Not now, but in future. Epic Dolomisa, then Schaefer, then Swart.
Chair, this is a committee, and it holds serious meeting in discussion. And the normal thing that I understand to happen is that 10 minutes reflect the point that was being discussed, and maybe a little bit of the various views, but importantly, the decisions that were taken, if any were taken. So it's not a question of whether they are priests or they are comprehensive. It's a matter of them indicating to us what took place in the meeting, what was under discussion, what were the views, and then what was the decision.
Yeah, thanks. I largely agree with that. I mean, we don't need a verbatim report of the minutes, but we need to know what was the issue, what were the varying points of view that were discussed by who, and then what the decision was. And Mr. Chair, can I just suggest also the experience from a previous committee, we don't necessarily always have to do it on the very next meeting. I mean, there were occasions before where we had one meeting just to approve minutes, so that's also an option. We could do a few at a time.
Did you do matters arising? That's a relief. Steve?
If we're going to go the route that we're going to have to accept minutes, then those minutes must be as crisp as possible. And I agree with what Advocate Holomisa says just very briefly. Because for us to then go through, we sit in twice, three times a week. So you can imagine the number of minutes that are going to be accumulated. Let's just go back to the whole why we're having this discussion. Was it relates to a dispute is what was said in a previous meeting. Now, my experience in the Justice Committee previously, when Johnny was chairman, we had a dispute and we listened to the tapes.
That's what we did.
So maybe that's where the verbatim recording is. And the clerk then went and took it upon himself to listen to the tapes, get to the specific section about where the issue was discussed that was in contention. Mm-hmm. There you've got exactly what we need.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that we keep, if we're going to have minutes, I'm not well, other committees do it, maybe we have to keep it as short as possible. I would still like to have access to PMG, but that is an issue that Mr. Jeffrey said, will you raise it with, and I still support that view on whether it's not official, I fully appreciate that, but it is minutes that are readily available that are helpful as we're going along. But just that's, to me, the answer is to go to the oral recording when there is a dispute.
Okay, but just bear in mind, I'm not sure how long they keep those. That's the other problem. I once had to defend my presence in the National Assembly. And I did. I had to go there and say to them, please, you have to find the video. And they found it and said, you're lucky. Tomorrow we would have wiped it clean. And it cost me 70 euros. But, you know, if you want us, we need to also think about how long these must be kept. These are all just details, but I hear what you're saying, Mr. Jeffrey, and then Christine.
I, as I said, they're separate issues. I would like access to the PMG minutes, not because they're official, but on the basis that they are a record, some kind of record of the meeting, that the public has access to. And I think that should be, I mean, I can get it for myself by paying for it. How much is it? Can I just, through your chair, can I just ask Mr. Kapita how much it is?
No.
Well, look, it's a couple of, it's not cheap.
No, it's not. You can ask him in a break.
No, it was just yeah. So I would rather say that why can't that be done on behalf of all of us? Okay,
and that means all the committees.
Well, at least this committee, because the problem is, Chair, that we have a lot of deliberations, but we don't take decisions very very often. So even on this issue, we've been deliberating a lot on it.
Yeah.
We haven't taken any decision, and we may not even take a decision today. The rate we're going. So I would like those, and I think that I would hope that the other members of the committee would want that. As far as the official record, I would urge that the committee secretary is honest about what he can do and not do, because as I think it was Mr. Swart had said, we sit often. Arrangements then have to be made for other things that we're doing, which presumably Mr. Romano does in his you know, when the committee is not sitting. And Chair, I notice he's not taking any minutes about what I'm saying. So, PMG were, yeah. So
he's actually strengthening your argument.
Yeah. So, Chair, I think that it would be, I mean, really, I sit in some meetings where they do record everything that everybody says, the programming committee, for example, but that's once a week, and it's a short meeting. And I don't agree I think if minutes are not adopted immediately, then you can forget it, because people have forgotten what was said. And this thing that Ms. Schaefer speaks about, adopting a whole set of minutes in one go, I'm not really sure the purpose of it. But I think what would be useful is, I mean, we can identify what it is, but the issue that was raised, some of the points of view, not necessarily who said what, and then obviously any decision, but like one or two pages at the most per meeting.
Yeah, I just want to add to what Jago was saying about the PMG. Sorry. It's also useful in terms of archives, because there are other things you might want to cross reference to a different committee or some other discussion. Or like, so PMG is like, from a resource point of view, it's very, very useful.
Well, before I recognize that, Dr. Lisa, the question of the archives is very important. Hence my comment about the records being wiped. Or deleted. In terms of prior, you're not supposed to do that. And in this day and age, we don't keep hard copy. You're not going to get piles and piles of minutes. They should be electronically or digitally recorded and stored. And that should go a long way to solving some of the problems. I'm not sure, when I meet with the House Chair, these are some of the things I'll raise with him. I'm not sure how they see this, because this was brought to my attention some time back. The written submissions we receive from civil society, what happens to them? And we've dealt with some pretty important pieces of legislation, setting up of the Constitutional Court, the Human Rights Commission, stuff like that. All those submissions, I think they lost, which is sad. Because saved in PCMS, what's PCMS? It's recent. Well, I'm talking about 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, and those I think are lost, sadly, because they helped us back in the day to reach some momentous decisions, and it's a pity. I'm not saying that today's discussions are not important, they are, but in the same way that we discuss the setting up of the Constitutional Court, the increase in the salary of the DPP should also be recorded somewhere and kept for posterity, because what do you do if someone makes a prior request for the details of today's discussion, 5 years hence, and they're told, well, we don't have them. I think we're falling foul of the law, but that's my own personal opinion. But I will raise it with the House Chair and other members, and we'll take it from there. Have you acknowledged, sir?
Chair, this should not be a difficult matter. I happen to chair some other committee. And what happens is that the secretary will submit the minutes to me as the chairperson, so that I can have a look at them and read them, and then they are distributed to other members, so that when we meet, everyone has had a chance to have a look at them, so that eliminates the wasting of time. And indeed, this is an official meeting. These are official meetings of the committee, and therefore they should be properly recorded. And again, because we have not been taking decisions in the past, we've just been deliberating, especially on this particular matter. And the important thing is that the decisions that we actually take, because when we deliberated, we didn't take any decisions, just raised some points of view. Some of those views we agreed on some of them, we just left them hanging, as yet indicated. And JJ's worry was that you raised the point, for instance, that one of the views that were expressed was that if there's a gratuity, it has to be dictated to May 2010. And that's what you said, Chairperson.
No,
you did say.
No,
that's why so you actually asked, who said that? Whose view was that?
No. That's not what I said.
Okay, well.
That's
taking
me. No, that's not what I said.
In any event, Chairperson, the point I was making was that when we deliberate, it's not that necessary that we record who said what, when said what, because you know what your position is. The important thing is the decision that was taken. So far, we have not taken any decision on this matter, and my hope is that today, that's when we'll be taking decision, because this first thing has been dragging on for long, and I think it must be keeping this lady anxious about what exactly. Position here.
Okay. All right. I think that's been an important discussion. Mr. Romano has taken note. So his workload has suddenly and dramatically increased. It hasn't increased. All right, fine. We'll do as you proposed, Advocate Olamisa. Honorable members, the other thing is that we do have access, all of us, we have access to emails. So I propose that these minutes be emailed to us. Well, if you don't open and read them, please don't come here and say, I didn't get my minutes. Where's the hard copy? You will have received an email copy, and that suffices. Okay?
Chair, we want to see, I think we would, when the minutes come, open the meeting,
oh, why just the two of them?
Like that.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I'll put it to the whole house. All right. Let's get. Can we get back to the DPP's review of salary and benefits? Debbie Schaefer?
Chair, I think we almost agreed except the fact of the gratuity. But I've got a proposed resolution with two options, if I may put it. Is that okay? Taking into account of the pending proposal for the remuneration of Chapter 9 institution office bearers to be dealt with by the Independent Remuneration Committee in the near future, and given that the DPP's remuneration package was agreed to shortly before she was appointed in 2005, which provided for annual increments, further taking into account that the DPP's remuneration package was substantially adjusted by the previous public protector, the committee resolves to recommend, one, that the current remuneration package of 1.2, whatever it is, be approved. All other terms of the resolution of the 4th of August 2005 remain applicable. And then if we agree on a gratuity, we can add that in. But that's my basic proposal. The only issue I would like to argue about, and I think we all agree on pretty much that, as far as I understand. But that's my proposal, that we don't agree to any further increase in her salary based on the fact that she has had a substantial adjustment that has been redetermined effectively by the public protector. I have my doubts as to whether that's legal, but if we take this resolution now, we can effectively ratify that. If necessary, we might need to specifically say ratify. that we approve that salary, because it isn't actually that much different. I mean, it is a sort of a 30% difference between the public protector and the DPP. I don't think we should say that it has to always be 30%, but I don't think it's an unreasonable amount. It's a decent amount of money. Her responsibilities aren't as heavy as the public protector. My motivation still for some kind of gratuity is that even though, I mean, she was appointed in 2005 and accepted that, but nevertheless, the Act does provide, as far as I can recall, for the method to be redetermined from time to time. I don't think it's an unrealistic expectation of hers to expect it to have had some adjustment. We could be argued that the adjustment has happened in the 1.2 million, because that was effectively, it wasn't just an inflation-linked increase. So that's one option. Otherwise, it could be argued as well that she seems to be pegged with at the level, you know, she's sort of lumped together with senior management services, and I do have a concern that she does not have the same benefits as senior management in the sense of performance bonuses and so on. So that's the one reason I think we could consider a gratuity. She doesn't get a pension, she has to provide for it out of her package, and she doesn't have the capacity to earn performance bonuses. She also does, the requirements for her to be appointed are also very similar. She has to have pretty similar qualifications to the public protector. So it's not an insignificant position. So that's my view.
Can we get a copy of that? Advocate Holomisa and then Steve Swart.
Jefferson, I think Honorable Schaefer's proposal seems to be in line with the views expressed by a number of people in the committee in the previous meeting. And I think I agree with her also when she said we didn't sort of agree on whether she should get a gratuity or not. And having supported the main thrust of her proposal, I would also propose that we consider a gratuity going back to 2010 when they approached Parliament for the redetermination of a salary. I think it has been her expectation, and I want to say a reasonable one, that when we determine a salary, some kind of adjustment will result, and the adjustment naturally meant an increase of some kind in one or the other of the many benefits that she is getting. So, to finalize this matter and put her out of any trauma that she might have, because she doesn't know whether we'll be giving her anything or not, let's accept this proposal and consider some kind of gratuity. As I say, going back to 2010. Thank you, sir.
Well, before I recognize you, Steve, the gratuity is only paid out at the end of her service.
Yeah.
Okay.
Calculation.
Well, this is how the formula works. And I'm getting this from the document you received, which Christine Silkstone has very kindly put together for us. The formula is there, it's a mathematical formula. D represents her basic salary per annum. E is the period in years in office, and F represents the provision for the calculation of income tax at 40%. So if you say, taking it back to 2010, I'm not sure what you mean. My understanding is that it will start, if we agree to the gratuity, it will start when she took office. If you say back to 2010, then she loses 5 years, is that what you say?
Is the time at which we decided to determine her salary package.
All right. No, I'm just trying to understand, you know, whether we...
Yes, you see, that other argument, Chair, that has been made, that when she took the position, she knew what she was to
get. Yeah.
And then she only raised the matter in 2010.
Okay.
That please determine my salary.
All right, Steve Swart, followed by John Jeffrey.
Yes, I would agree with what Debbie has said, just possibly to add that when she spoke about the determination that was made
that is in addition to the inflation-linked adjustments that are made annually. You need to put that clause in as well. So it's not only the one-off determination, but is that annual inflation-linked adjustment. So that would be in addition to the annual inflation-linked adjustments. That clause must come in there. I didn't hear it, but maybe, hopefully, okay. And then on the issue of the gratuity, now I am in favor of some form of gratuity, and one then needs to look at the basis of this is, and again, National Treasury would have to come in and advise us, but it seems this is probably, this gratuity that is calculated here is pretty accurate. The principle is, the public protector, we're taking this formula from the public protector's formula, is that correct? But the one major difference which actually justifies this formula is the public protector's formula does not have the F, which is the tax deduction, if I understand correctly. on page 605, which was the report which we, unless it was changed subsequent, because the 13th September tabling has got the formula which has got a specific clause that says, notwithstanding anything to the contrary contained in any other law, the gratuity payable under this paragraph shall not be taxable. So I see this has got the F, which I just need clarity then. It's on this document that was handed out, Consolidation of Determinations, and it's a tabling in Parliament. Report of the Standing Committee on the 13th of September 1995, which, unless it's been revoked, says in terms that that should not be taxed. But we can, in our determination, say it must be taxed, which means there's a 40% difference.
Christine?
Please put the mic closer to you.
Sorry, I think you're correct. What I used when they, when the public, the Deputy Public Protector sent in her proposal around the gratuity, around the salary of the judge president, I used that formula, which does put tax in.
John Jeffrey.
My difficulty is, I mean, look, firstly, one thing I find interesting is on the supplementary submission, it was just, I don't know if colleagues have got it, it's 6th of May 2011, letter to the Speaker, an Annex to A, which is the salary history of public Deputy Public Protector. So December 05, it was 609,000, January 06, a year later, 685. January 07, 805, January 08, 803, and then the big jump, January 09, 1.079, and so on. The 1.2 is what she was earning in January last year, so there would be presumably a increase for January 2012. But, you know, look, I'm one thing with the formula is it all seems to be a little bit arbitrary. I mean, okay, D is the basic salary, that's fine. You divide it by 7, which is the number of years that the position is there for, so that's understandable. Then you double it. I don't know why. Then you multiply it by the period of the years in office, which is understandable, plus 3. Now why 3? Why not 2? Why not 0? And then you put in the tax deduction. But my concern is basically, what's the point of the times 2 and the plus 3? Those are arbitrary. And in a sense, if we are arguing for a lesser amount than the full term, then we wouldn't be having E. We would be having, you know, for 2 years or whatever. So that's my difficulty. I don't know how gratuities usually work. but I don't know if anybody can explain why we double the thing and why we add 3 to the number of years. So I mean, the public protector would, for example, be getting a gratuity for 10 years, effectively. Seems a bit odd. And I think also the formula for the, I'm not sure, Chair, through you, I mean, Christine talks about a judge. I mean, judges don't get gratuities. They get their salaries for life. So there's no gratuity, so. But through you, Chair, where did this F come from? Christine says it comes from what the public protector submitted on the.
You have to look at it next should be of that.
Same document.
No, right at the end, the gratuity projection that they have.
But and then you know this formula that's with the 30% deduction. I mean, tax is 3.4 million. That is on the current or last year's salary. So it'll be more. And I'm not, I mean, you know, after yesterday's very impressive display in administrative competence, you know, which seems to have been, well, anyway, no, let me not go there. But yeah, I think that I mean, quite clearly, there was a major review in 2010 when the salary jumped. So that takes care of, I mean, we should have done it, but that was done. So that takes care of that. The House specifically resolved or the committee resolved not to do a gratuity and not to include membership of the GPF. I don't think that 1.2 million is something to be sneezed at. Yeah. But look, I'm not wildly against it. But if we do go for a gratuity, let's. I don't think it should be necessarily that large. And I think that a gratuity. I mean, there needs to be a rational basis for it. A gratuity of 3.4 million is much too much, particularly when it was unexpected. Even the 2.5 years, which is 1.8 or nearly 2 million, I think is also quite excessive. I mean, that's 2 years' salary. I mean, maybe 1 year's salary could be it, but I also don't understand this formula. It seems arbitrary to me. Why you double it and why you add 3 to the number of years.
Have you got all of me, sir?
First of all, Chair, because I don't know anything about figures and things like that. Maybe we might want to agree on a principle and then have someone who is competent to do the calculations and bring it back to us so that we can tell whether we're comfortable or not with the figures as presented. But the point is that if this matter had been brought to our attention in May 2010, then we had set in May 2010 and determined that, for instance, want to give at least a gratuity of some kind, then it is on that basis, therefore, that I would argue that the gratuity then, if it's possible for you to be backdated like other benefits, then it be backdated to that time when we're requested to take a decision on the matter. To say a year or 1.5 years and things like that, it would sound more arbitrary than saying let it start in May 2010 when the matter was brought to our attention.
David Schaefer.
So, Chair, I agree in principle that if we could work on a calculation that is based on a salary, that then start from that time. But my question still hasn't been answered from last time as to whether we are bound to follow this formula or not. And I don't know who needs to give us that information, whether it's legal, the state advisors, or whether it's finance, but we need to know I mean, there's no point in us taking a resolution that we are happy with the gratuity, but we're not happy with the amount on the current calculation if we are in fact bound by that formula. So we could even say we're prepared to do a gratuity calculated on her salary only for the period May 2010 onwards. But now we still don't know also whether she's going to, you know, does it make a difference whether she gets reappointed for another term? Because then that's going to also substantially increase the amount. I think we agree in principle on every other aspect, but this gratuity issue needs to be clarified for us as to are we bound by this formula or not? And can we just make our own determination or not? And I really think we need to know that, because if we say gratuity and then suddenly we get told, no, well, it's actually going to be 3 million, or it can only be done on the whole 7-year term, then that might well change our opinion.
Who would tell us?
That's what I want to know. I think, surely, is it finance or lawyers?
No, we are required to make a recommendation or a determination. Beg your pardon, Victoria. Okay. Now, if we make the determination, I don't see anyone coming and saying, no, you can't do that. It has to be 3 million. Then where's the point in the provision in the law?
If we're bound to do that, then that's fine. I'm just worried that if there may be some other provisions that I don't know about as to how a gratuity is calculated.
The only concern that has been raised, I'm sorry to do this to you, is whether Treasury will agree, not to the amount, but to the fact that they'll say, well, sorry, we don't have the money, something to that effect. That would be the only concern that was raised by some of you. And you said, in that being the case, at some point we would need to consult with Treasury.
I'm just asking another question, sir. Was this matter ever raised with the public protector as to whether they've made provision for this kind of possible increment in the budget?
The MC might have.
No, that point, because I remember it was another point of disagreement with the public protector in terms of understanding her role, function. I'd asked, and they haven't, and she then said once we approve, she'll go and ask Treasury, and it had to be pointed out to her that we do that. I think the issue with Treasury is also, I mean, we make the determination, or Parliament makes the determination. So if we decide a gratuity must be paid, then they don't have a veto. But we do, in terms of taking that decision, need to get their input. But look, it could be in terms of environment. I mean, from the department, I think. But those kinds of details one would have to look at. It would be a resolution of the House, so I don't know if a adjustments appropriation would be necessary. But Chair, I don't know. I mean, I would propose, and these are obviously all individual positions, that 1 year's salary. I mean, this formula seems arbitrary. I don't share Debbie's concern that we're bound by it. I mean, maybe this is a normal formula used to determine gratuities. I don't think it needs to be linked to the date on which the request was made, because that would relate if there were a salary increase, that should be backdated. The gratuity is for the end of the year, and quite frankly, when this thing was first tabled, we may well have decided, look, we don't want to give her the type of gratuity that the public protector gets, but let's give her a year's salary at the end. So I don't think there needs to be a linkage to the date of the application. If we were approving a salary increase, yes, there would then have to be. But I would want to say, because that would then be in the region of I mean, it's the basic. Well, actually, wait. That's the basic salary. So that is that's 60% of what she would be getting this year. So that would be just less than a million.
Plus tax, yes.
Plus tax.
Plus tax.
Plus tax.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I get your point.
I think that maybe that's an easier option to do that, because then it also won't matter whether her term is extended or not. We agree that in principle she gets, on the termination of her term of office, she gets a gratuity equivalent to 1 year's salary at the time she finishes. I think I would be okay with it.
Yeah, maybe 1 year's salary, full stop, not basic.
What does that mean? Because Steve is saying we need to give her 1 year's salary that has already been taxed.
So yeah, you see,
we're going to add to the 1 year's salary so that the taxman gets his share.
Yeah,
and she's left with the 1 year's salary.
Her package is, or maybe it would end up being the same, I don't know. Her package is divided into a basic salary, which is 60% of the total amount, and a flexible portion, which is 40%.
Okay.
So the one thing that the resolution does do is to say that D, the amount you're working with, is the basic salary.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the 60%. Now, the flexible portion was included her medical aid stuff, her bonus, 13th check, housing allowance, car allowance, cash allowance, all those aspects. And maybe it's fairer if one is giving a gratuity that it is for the full package. And well, obviously I think that should be taxed. Then it actually ends up being about the same, because the tax rate is 40%. Yeah, and that's quite a good bit of money. It means you can spend a year looking for a job without having to get an income.
I think she'll be snapped up if she's not treated.
I would have told as well.
Have you got all of me, sir?
Yeah. Chairperson, we're required to determine remuneration in other terms and conditions of employment. So the matter of gratuity falls within that ambit. So the point that JJ was making was that if we're talking only about the salary, then we'd have to go back to 2010. But I'm saying that this is about terms and conditions as well as salary. And I don't know the Deputy Public Treasurer. No help from here.
I'm not sure the relevance of that, but
No, it's not on record.
It's not on record.
We've got
the 1 year salary acting as a gratuity. You've not said anything about that.
No, my point is that I don't understand the basis of that. It sounds arbitrary to me. While JJ believes that mine is arbitrary.
Oh,
but the point I'm making, the point I'm making is that this was brought to our attention in 2010.
Okay.
And then that's when we should have started to make a determination. Now that we're making this determination in 2012, I'm saying therefore we should consider the period between now and the time that it was brought to our attention to look into it.
Okay. JJ?
No, look, I mean, the resolution, we make the determination whenever. But because the gratuity only comes at the end, we would have had in 2010, if we had looked at it, a number of options. We could have said, okay, we will give the same gratuity as the public protector, which is for the full 7 years. Or we could have said, we'll give her a year's salary at the end of her term. And that's the one I would have gone for. So I don't think it because she came at a particular point, that the gratuity needs to be for the number of years from that point. I mean, we could say now, the one option before us is 7 years. Okay? The full term. That's the one proposal that Christina's got here. There's another proposal which is 2.5 years. I don't know if that is from largely from roughly from when she came. Or I think a year's salary is I don't see it. I mean, you know, usually if you get dismissed or if you leave, you get a month's salary. I mean, that's quite common. So I think in this case, where it was a fixed term, a year's salary is not that irrational.
For once, I'm agreeing with JJ, but I agree with your point. Like, but if the salary had been, I understand your point that it is all the things, but that is so. I mean, if we had decided in 2010 that we weren't going to give her an increase in the salary at all, but we were going to pay her a gratuity, then the gratuity would only be payable anyway at the end of the term. So it's not, you know, if we are going to backdate the gratuity now and say it's calculated on her salary or on the time period from 2010, we're then going back to the formula, where we have to look at the time she's in service. And the other problem is that if we agree on, you know, based on a time period, that's not going to solve the problem if she is reappointed, because then she's effectively going to get a gratuity for a much longer time. So if we agree on a fixed year, whether she's appointed or reappointed, if she's reappointed, she'll then get that gratuity at the end of a 14-year period on that salary that she's earning at that point. And I just think it's more certain then, you know, that as to what exactly she's going to get.
My understanding, Sir President, is that when her term expires, she might apply. She has to apply if she's still interested in the position. And like everybody else, she might be reappointed, she might not. But then if she's appointed, she will be entitled to a gratuity if you agree on it. But then that has nothing to do with the new term, because the other term will be a completely new term.
It will be as if the granting of the gratuity is dependent on her not being reappointed. So the one has nothing to do with
it. It has nothing to do with the new term. Is complete, something completely new and different.
But Jay, I think that the gratuity, if let's say she is reappointed, the gratuity would, or whether she's reappointed or not, the gratuity would have to be paid out at the end of the term. So she gets that cash and she can carry on working.
Okay.
Because the other aspect would be that it is the D on this. Well, it's unless we. Well, no. We'd have to specify basically. I think that if she is reappointed, that gratuity must be paid at the end of the when she leaves. But I think it sounds better, because it's also, remember, it's calculated on the current year's salary that we're talking about is the salary for this year, not okay. The salary in 7 years' time.
I didn't know that was an issue.
Sorry?
I thought it was this year's salary.
Yes, but then that means that then she gets paid it at the end of this term, regardless.
Yes.
Well, no, that's what we must specify.
It's at the end of her term.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever that is. Well, that's another issue.
Mm.
So let's not, you know, throw that in to confuse us.
No.
We've agreed now that that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
Her term ends sometime this year. Mm-hmm. She will get the gratuity. Full stop.
Yeah.
Now, whether she's reappointed or not, that's a separate matter. Okay.
But then, I don't know, if we're agreed on a year's salary, then I think what would need to, because it's we don't determine if it's the house, so we need to get to the support of the house. And I think then, Chair, that, I mean, obviously there's a proposed resolution from...
I'm having it typed up.
Schaefer. Yeah, but I don't think we can approve it now.
Okay.
Because I think we need to get the input from Treasury as to where this money is going to come from.
Well, in particular, it's the gratuity.
Just the gratuity.
And the gratuity part is still to be added to that draft proposal.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So because I sent it off to be typed while you were debating it.
Okay.
And
I don't think it's a good idea for us to adopt the resolution without having had an input from Treasury.
Okay. Honourable members?
So I don't know if we can take it. I mean, the thing can be circulated. I would have suggested one change on Ms. Schaefer's wording, if I can remember it correctly, and that was that, you know, where it's reference to I think she said condoned. What?
I just said it was a substantial increase.
No, but you talk about in the resolution that we approve the increase or maybe that the increase be continued, or that the
it remain applicable.
Yeah, remain applicable, because the thing basically is one doesn't want a situation. I don't think we can say that what the public protector did
was correct.
Was incorrect.
Okay.
We don't want to say it's correct or incorrect. If we're saying it's incorrect, then we're actually saying to the Auditor General, you're not doing your job properly. The Auditor General determines whether there's unauthorized expenditure.
Why aren't we allowed to say the Auditor General's not doing his job properly?
She says we are allowed to, but she doesn't want us to start.
No. You see, the only people who can say that are the opposition party members. If the ANC says that, then there's big problems.
But Chair, just. and then we just need to be careful, because it lists the current package. This is the 1.201. But my understanding is that that is not the current package. That is the January 2011 package, and we may not know what the January 2012 package is. I don't know when the SMS increases come in.
Is there no way that we can establish that? I know you've tried, but sorry to dump on you like this, but I thought these things were a matter of public record anyway. So difficult to just get this. Just phone the CEO and say, send us this stuff.
Yeah.
And the Office of the Institution Supporting Democracy, we don't use them.
Sorry?
No, just get them to phone and say, listen, Nyambos, send me that salary details. I'm being very simplistic, JB, forgive me. Alright, essentially then, what you've more or less reached agreement on is that she should get a gratuity, however, not in terms of the formula that we have asked Christine to work something out on, but rather that it should be 1 year's salary. Take into consideration the question of tax.
Total salary at the time she leaves office.
Total salary at the time the term ends. Don't say at the time she leaves office.
Look, if she wants to resign on the spot, then I think she should still get the gratuity.
Yeah.
So that would be then total salary at the time she leaves office, not the term ends. Term ends in term. Yeah, but anyway, and the total thing, the basic, the 60 and the 40, and then it gets taxed. And then, Chair, maybe with Treasury, just to avoid, I don't know if colleagues will be happy with this, but I would want to suggest that maybe you, as Chair, write to the Minister of Finance, saying the committee's considering this, and does he have any comment, or do we want Treasury officials to come here? But I was trying to avoid that, you know.
Trying to avoid Treasury officials coming here?
Having to come here, that we could get the information in by writing, and then if it seems unclear, we call them. But otherwise, I can just see Mr. Romano, who's going to be very busy editing his minutes, and putting in the corrections members want, right, having to liaise with Treasury to get them to come here on a suitable date and so on.
Write letter to the Minister of Finance.
Yeah, and that you try and do it basically
outside. To the Minister or to the DG?
Minister. Well, I don't know. Doesn't matter.
All right, I'll write to the Minister.
Well, whichever is appropriate, Chair, I don't know. You can ask them.
Okay.
But it would just be that maybe it can be dealt with, and then if there's a response to say, okay, there can be a environment, maybe involve the DG of Justice, because it's actually coming from the Justice budget. Maybe start with her, Chair, just informally. But it would be maybe useful to put something, or be able to report to the committee.
Yeah.
I need someone to give me that actual figure. But otherwise, that's fine. Anything else? Prof?
Chair, I'm in support of Honorable Jeffrey's suggestion.
I'm still a little concerned because the term comes to end, can end at the end of November. But then we just need to like remind that the next person could come in or could like the same person. But then do you want this sort of determination then to carry on to the next person?
Chairperson, this determination is for this particular deputy public protector.
Yes, that's my understanding. From time to time.
Yeah, we'll have to sit down for the next one. We'll have
from
to sit
time
down.
To time.
Then have the similar discussion for the next one. If the remunerations committee, that the commission doesn't make.
Yes, I'm hoping that by the time the next DPP is appointed, or even if this one is reappointed, that independent commission will have been established. And then that takes away the angst and the headache. Debbie Schaefer, followed by John Jeffrey.
My concern is also, I mean, we have to make the determination from time to time. My understanding is that it applies to the office. Now, if we make a determination now, and then her term ends in November, or otherwise she decides she's not happy and resigns now, and a new one has to be appointed, on what terms is the new one going to be appointed, given that we have to make the determination? I would have thought it would be on what we have currently decided.
My understanding is, and it's linked to the public protector, the determination that has been adopted by the House stands. Okay, so when this public protector came in, or just before she came in, we didn't make a new total determination. I think we amended one aspect. That's the problem with trying to work out exactly what she gets, is because the determination doesn't get made anew each time, it gets amended. So you've got to look at like five resolutions. So this determination that was made on the 4th of August 2005 is a determination for the salary, the remuneration and conditions of service of the Deputy Public Protector. Not Deputy Public Protector Shy, but no. The Deputy Public Protector, whoever it is. So the Public Protector's remuneration has been determined according to the House resolution as amended, and this is the determination for the Deputy Public Protector, and those stand regardless of who's there. What we need to make sure in the resolution that then this acceptance of the salary level becomes the new determination. And so when a new public protector comes in, and then a gratuity, 1 year's gratuity is added, when a new public protector comes in, or before the new public deputy comes in, the House could decide to make another determination, which will be applicable to the new one. But this stands until it's amended, as the resolutions for the determinations for the public protector stand.
Okay.
So for example, the deputy, sorry, the level of the SCA judge, that was, I think, goes back to about 98, I think. Wasn't for this public protector. Wasn't.
Really?
It was 98, yeah.
98?
Yeah.
What are we thinking? And who was the public protector in 98? Who was the public protector in 98? That's why. That's why. Sure, they came after. That's why. Convergent of views now.
Yes, sir.
Swart's point. I see the F comes from 2002.
Yes.
Where the tax was put in. Yeah. But what we were doing in 2002 was amending the 95 resolution, which had been amended in 96, because those were standing. And this is the last time, wasn't it, that the time to time, as far as the public protector, I mean, what are we going to do when she comes and says, you should have reviewed from time to time, and you last reviewed in 2002, that's 10 years ago. That's for those who hold the argument that we, the time to time, that we were at fault for not reviewing.
Then
we are at fault, and you haven't noticed it, Debbie, for not reviewing the public protectors herself, because it hasn't been reviewed for 10 years. We can't adopt it now. I would have just said that the we need to check if this 1.2 is the current remuneration. I would imagine it is not, because I think that's last year's remuneration. Should we not be looking at an amendment, as it happened before, an amendment to the resolution that was adopted in 2005. That's what we've been doing with the public protector. That was when we did that's the resolution for the deputies. But Chair, I think the detail can be worked out. I mean, I think the principle seems to be that we agree with what she's getting now,
right,
and we need to do whatever we need to do. We need to do whatever we need to do to, without saying that the former public protector was right or wrong, we need to clear it up beyond any doubt that it's fine.
So in one there we say that the current remuneration package be approved, without actually stating what the figure is, because whatever it is, it's...
The resolution does have all of them have a figure, even though that was backdated.
All right, fine, we'll find that figure.
We then need to provide for a gratuity of 1 year's salary, which would be the monthly rate of what she was getting when she leaves. I'm just thinking, she leaves in November, let's say she serves out the term, let's say the increase, when does the SMS increase come in? Is it April like us? She gets the increase in April. Is 1 year's salary a salary then from November to April at the new rate, and then April to whatever at this rate? And then that reminds me that in fact this 1.2, which what she was getting in January last year, is not, she must be getting more this year in January, and she will then get an increase in April if the SMS increase goes through in April. Yes. So the figure, at least, we don't know what the increase will be, but the figure at least currently must be available, must be even in the budget. I mean,
But the important thing is that the gratuity will be based on current salary remuneration package at the time that she leaves. Do we need to justify it? No, why? No. I don't know. We need to think about how she's informed. I'm not sure how it was done in the past.
Yeah, because they've been to talk to us.
Should we not send her a formal letter?
What does it do when she publicizes her report?
Go to the meeting.
Well, I hear what you're
would
saying.
We not want perhaps to.
We can say to her in the letter that it's subject to the decision of the House. And this is our recommendation. No.
I would say
no. Yeah, representations to whom?
That's the point I was going to make, sir.
What?
Whether we do not want to give her an opportunity to listen to our decision, which we are going to recommend to the House for adoption. Provisional, what do they call the investigation? Provisional report. when they have prepared the provisional report, they present it to the person concerned so that they can make any recommendation.
What? She can't do anything. There's no appeal, by the way, as I understand it, or further representation. I sincerely hope you're not going to.
No, I'm not insisting. I'm just raising.
All right.
That can be on your mind.
Yes?
Follow me, sir, to go and inform both public protector as his eminent.
So they're not that for the scene.
We created one.
We came up with rules. In that case, I would propose JJ.
All right, I honorable members, I'm not sure if there's anything else. In which case, let's just go. Okay. Mr. Romano is bringing my attention to the proposed visit to the Constitutional Court. Tuesday, the 20th of March, honorable members. Okay. We honorable members, aside from the emails all of you might have received, I know I did, from Dean Smuts, there's been another article written in yesterday's Business Day about the master's office. I thought I would ask the PA to make it available to you, but this is written by David Gleason.
Did I tell you about Ambrosini's one?
No, no, no. His is on the other side. I've read that too, and I'll also distribute that for your Apex Court. But reading this column, it doesn't sound good at all. So I hope you agree that we should visit the master's office there. Oh, disciplinary committee. Okay. Fine, but... And then yesterday, members, you also insisted that we should also visit other courts and so on. Are you still of that view?
We don't get much time for oversight, and seeing we're up there.
Uh-huh.
The two I was interested in were... There've been a number of complaints about Gauteng South High Court. I don't know if it's improved. And the
what
other
specifically
one,
about the court?
Conditions.
Oh, okay.
And the other one then was... and one of the decisions we're going to be taking, by the way, is to have one High Court for Gauteng. So this Gauteng South, Gauteng North will go, because a lot of Gauteng North will... A lot of their jurisdiction will change because they will lose Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Because at the moment they cover all of it. But that's one area. The other area is there was a report a few weeks ago, a month ago, about conditions in the criminal court in Alexandra. But the Gauteng South chair is directly linked to the bill.
All right. The point, I'm looking at the logistics, Mr. Chair. We're setting aside the Tuesday for the court. Mm-hmm. I don't want us to be constrained by time.
No.
So Monday, we will do the oversight visit.
Yes.
Right. The master's office, that's definitely on the card. Right? Now, I'm not sure that we can do all the others.
No, I'm just throwing out ideas.
As a possibilities?
Yeah.
All right. Then, honorable members, the master's office on Monday the 19th, that's one. The question I'm putting to you is, where else should we go? Mr. Jeffrey has put forward three other options.
No,
court in Alexander Township, the South Gauteng High Court. J.B. Simonioni and then David
Schaefer. Chairperson, I will appeal to say the Justice Committee should not leave out the South Gauteng High Court. There has been a lot of complaints about it. And also during the interview at the JSC, some of the candidates were talking about their horrible experience they had with the South Gauteng High Court, and then the judge, the deputy judge president Mujapilo, when I was making follow up and saying what are these things you're complaining about, did talk to me thereafter to say when will be the Constitutional Court coming, because he also wants to talk to us insofar as the South Gauteng High Court is concerned. So I'm appealing to say in our overview we should not leave it out.
So
South Gauteng. Yeah, I agree with that, yes. Because I mean there's even been reports of judges senior counsel not even wanting to be appointed as judges in that court because of the problems.
Scheduling, are we going to start the morning, Monday morning or the Sunday, depending on what we decide now?
Yes, that's why we're looking at all this, because we need to decide in advance to assist Mr. Romano with the logistics, and that'll determine when we fly up and stuff like that.
I would think just those two then, Master's Court and the South Gauteng.
South Gauteng.
That's more than enough for the day.
JJ?
I think that's fine, and aren't isn't the Master's Office near...
Master's office is in Pretoria.
Is it in Pretoria?
It's the Pretoria Master's Office, where the big controversy is.
But look, I would suggest we fly up in the morning,
we deal with Gauteng South, or well, I don't know, it doesn't really matter which one. I mean, we will be presumably sleeping in Joburg because Constitutional Court is Hillbrow. Bromfontein. Well, where's the border?
I don't know. They say Bromfontein.
That's because they're snobs.
Well, everyone is. My daughter lives in an area called what? And when you ask her, she says, I live in Sandton.
Yeah, that's because the property price for Sandton is higher than...
Well, everyone does it.
But anyway, Chair, I'd want to suggest that we can't fit in two, but we look at flying up in the morning.
Monday morning. Fine.
You know, 8 o'clock flight, get there at 10. We can deal with the one and then deal with the other. Maybe it's easier if it's Masters. Well, I don't know. You've then got the traffic. Maybe first Masters.
First Masters, then we come back.
Counting staff.
Yeah.
The only thing is we then it will be emptier. But then you'll have more chance to interact with the judges.
Chair, the reason I'm sort of confused, last time I heard about the date was the 17th of March. Has it since been changed?
Yeah, I have to choose my words very carefully now. There's been, we've had an emissary. J.B. Skosana has acted as our emissary with the court. And they did put forward dates to us. And initially we accepted dates, and then they came back and said, no, we've changed our minds. And that's how now we've reached this date of the 20th, Tuesday the 20th of March.
For the 20th?
20th, yeah.
Then what are we supposed to be doing, the 19th?
The 19th is oversight visits, the Monday. Because initially I had thought we could do the oversight visits on the Wednesday, and it was pointed out to me yesterday that Wednesday is a holiday, public holiday. So then, that being the case, the members said, in that case, we'll do our oversight work on the Monday. And that is constituency
day.
What is it? Committee week?
Constituency work day.
All right, fine. So that's why those dates.
Okay.
So we fly up on the Monday. We go straight to Master's office in Pretoria. From there, come back, South Gauteng High Court, sleep over in Johannesburg. Tuesday morning, we meet with the Home Court. Honourable members, Vanani wants to know, do we visit the Master's office unannounced, or...? Well, it's just because he wants to be able to know... You see, I think what Mr. Romano is concerned about, and I'm reading him, is that between now and the 19th, they'll clean the act up. I don't know. So
yeah, I think it's difficult
tell them.
For this level to be unannounced. It's better to redo our preparation and maybe do some
money
and take pictures and
we've got the I'll just forward it to you in case. As well as
say before, this is how they looked, and then on the visit, this is how it looked.
Alright. Honourable members, it seems like there's more or less agreement on our program for those 2 days. The report on state-owned enterprises, or entities, I beg your pardon, state-owned enterprises, it's Freudian. I need you to look at it with a view to us discussing it, with a view to adopting a formal report. We have to. Yes.
This. My understanding is it was meant. I mean, you have the. You've got the Minister of Public Enterprises, but these are state-owned entities. I thought the review was meant to be of public entities. Public enterprises. So this issue of, I mean, you read the document
yes.
That Dean didn't read.
Why is the Legal Aid South Africa there, and what's the other one, the SIU there? I mean, where does that come from?
From the PFMA.
Yeah, from the PFMA, but who brought that up?
Well, the state-owned entities are listed in the PFMA.
Sure, but...
So the question they had were asked is, where do we find these state-owned entities?
Yeah.
And obviously someone said that they're listed in the PFMA, and lo and behold, there's the SIU and Legal Aid South Africa.
Because I don't think the... I mean, I don't know what we've been asked to do. The President's review.
Mm-hmm.
So he's appointing it, he's determining terms of reference. So, where is this idea of PFMA coming from, the PFMA entities?
Well, as I understand it, every committee has been asked to do this. But if there are state-owned entities falling within the purview of the committee's work, then they must be looked at by the committee.
Isn't the idea about commercial state-owned entities?
Commercial state-owned?
Yeah, for purposes of economic...
That's what I thought until I was told. I mean, I was very relaxed, you know. I thought, well, we don't have any, so fine.
Maybe we should get clarity so we don't waste our time. I mean,
from Parliament, that's where it seems to be coming from.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is the President is appointing, or has appointed, I can't remember where it is now, a committee to review the state-owned enterprises, public enterprises, the commercial ones. Okay. And that is what's happening. Now, I don't know where and that's an executive thing. I don't know where the linkage between that and Parliament has come from.
How's the shape?
But, I mean, is that correct? Because we come up and we say, look, Legal Aid South Africa, we've got the following to say, and then we give it to who? What happens to it?
Mr. Jeffrey, the House Chair simply said, he said, where's your report? And I expect your report by a certain date. And that was it.
Can we get the letter from the House?
I tend to agree with African Olamisa that it should be the commercial state-owned entities.
Why don't we look at our views on mine?
No, there's a lot of confusion about what entities are actually covered, and I did ask for clarification, and I was just told, well, nobody seems to also give an answer. We referred to a list of entities that the court will go forward within the Justice Ministry. And yeah, so this document is basically prepared around that. We need to basically discuss our interactions with the entities and then what challenges they face and then how we, our recognition.
That's what we always do at the committee.
That's what we always do,
yes.
That's what she put in
basically
that document. That's all she did. With heart and mouth. Okay. So, all right. What else will I do before I close the meeting? Is that it? All right. Thank you, honourable members. We're adjourned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.